The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, with all the news of the war, it almost feels like we need to catch up on some of the other news, little bits and pieces that we haven't had a chance to talk about. So yesterday, President Isaac Herzog had a conversation with President Vladimir Putin on the issue of the Jewish agency in Russia. Now, we know that there was a delegation sent to Russia to try to negotiate this with the Russian authorities. That particular meeting came to a dead end without any further plans being made to discuss it further or to try to continue this matter. We know that this is also due to be a part of a hearing in a Russian court, if not now this week, then certainly in the coming days. But President Herzog, as a former chairman of the Jewish agency, decided that he would simply lift the phone to President Putin, which he did yesterday. We understand that that was quite a frank discussion. In fact, the callback that one of the comments that was made by one of President Herzog's spokesmen said the discussion between the two presidents was frank and honest, which I read to mean they didn't agree with each other.
Yes, absolutely. That, frank and honest means we didn't agree on a darn thing.
Yeah, but they did agree to remain in close contact, which means at least that there is a line of discussion open to try to resolve this issue. But this is a matter that's still completely open and really not resolved yet. And it seems as if, though, the direction at the moment at least is that the Jewish agency in Russia will need to be liquidated. That's at least what my understanding is right now. Likud primaries are due to be held today ahead of the upcoming election. The Labour primaries were held yesterday. So we are moving towards determining the various lists that will be presented as part of the upcoming election. Some controversy surrounding at least one of the candidates on the Likud list. The court has barred him from taking place. Former Prime Minister Netanyahu, and of course leader of the Likud, he came out saying that that particular individual will not be allowed to participate in the primaries. And if his name is put forward, the leader of the Likud, Netanyahu, said that he will actually not exercise the so-called Norwegian option, which means that in the event that the Likud gets into power and certain representatives of the list are appointed to government positions, they will resign as members of the Knesset, allowing people who are further down the list to assume the position of members of Knesset. And what the former prime minister said is that, I know, I get very confused. So many former prime ministers these days who are around, I apologize for the confusion. The leader of the Likud, Benjamin Netanyahu, said that he will not exercise this Norwegian option, and he will therefore prevent that particular individual from becoming a member of Knesset in the event that he is actually elected onto the list. We will see what happens today in those primaries. Russia has launched an Iranian satellite into space yesterday from the Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. This is continuing close cooperation between Russia and Iran. And interestingly, Iran has said, oh, this is a satellite that will be used for agricultural and scientific purposes. Agricultural and scientific purposes. Very interesting indeed. The concern, of course, is that this is a spy satellite that Iran would be able to use for spying into Israel. Wow. And also, because of this cooperation, potentially Russia making use of the satellite in terms of what they're trying to do in Ukraine right now. So that wasn't really welcome, but apparently the satellite was successfully launched from Kazakhstan. Those are the little snippets that we have.
What's very concerning.
And now the main news.
If we just zoom out a little bit, we see this horrible alliance, almost like we saw in the Second World War, where you've got Russia, China, and Iran. We had the axis of evil as well in the Second World War. But now we're starting to see this developing as well. We're seeing Russia becoming more overtly critical of Israel. We see them moving closer to Iran. And one does wonder where this is going.
All true, and let's not exclude Turkey from this particular alliance, because we remember a few weeks ago that the summit meeting that took place in Iran, which invited President Putin and, of course, President Erdogan of Turkey. So let's not also exclude Turkey. Turkey right now are sitting very, very comfortably with one leg on each side of the fence. But at some point, I think Turkey is going to have to make up their mind which side of the fence they went to, which side of the fence they wish to jump off on.
Almost a reflection of their geography, where you've got the Bosphorus running through Istanbul, half in Asia, half in Europe. They get to decide. Ryan, let's talk more localized Israel news. Three wanted terrorists were killed yesterday in a raid by the IDF in Nablus. What more is known about this incident?
So we were talking about this yesterday as it was a developing story, quite an unusual raid by IDF in broad daylight. Usually these kind of raids are carried out overnight under the cover of darkness. Yesterday, that wasn't the case. We were talking about it on air, just literally as it was taking place. Some quite interesting footage has been released by the IDF. Helmet cam footage has been released by the IDF for those people who wish to look that up and just have some sort of an idea of what was going on there. But what we do know is that these three individuals, and in particular Ibrahim Nabulsi, he was the one who was really highlighted. Conflicting remarks as to whether he was in fact a commander in the Al-Aqsa Brigade or not. But certainly some reports have suggested that he did not have an organizational affiliation, but however, he had taken part in various attacks against Jews, including one recent attack, a shooting at Joseph's tomb, which ended in two Israeli civilians and an IDF commander being injured. So he's definitely someone who the IDF had signaled as somebody of interest, somebody who they had on their wanted list, and he had evaded arrest quite a number of times. In February, the IDF thought that they had actually got him. It was later discovered that he was alive, and yesterday, finally, he was caught. Very, very fascinating event. A voice message that was sent out by him just before he was killed, saying that he is about to be martyred and he loves his mother and things like that. Really, really weird messages that came out, a voice message, and then picture of his mother at the funeral carrying the stretcher with the body with a broad smile on her face, and then later being pictured holding a weapon firing in the air at the funeral. This was his mother. It was reported that the IDF did not have any casualties. And in fact, that was not entirely correct, because there was a casualty in yesterday's raid, and the casualty was Zili, a Belgian Malinois dog who served with the Yamam counterterrorism unit for a number of years. He had participated in quite a few hundred, we're told, operations with Yamam, the counterterrorism unit, under the control of the Israeli police force, actually. And Zili was eulogized not only by the head of the police, but indeed by Prime Minister Yair Lapid, who spoke about Zili saying that Zili was a part of the unit, beloved and professional, and that he will be missed by the unit. He will be missed by the dog handlers and the fighters he accompanied repeatedly in operational activity. That was a statement by the Prime Minister's office yesterday about Zili, the Belgian Malinois who was killed in that operation. What we understand is that Zili was sent in ahead of the troops, around the corner, into the house where operatives were holed up, and was killed in that operation, was shot, and probably saved the lives of IDF soldiers who otherwise would have had to undertake that role. He was the one who actually attracted the fire. So he will be buried in a military dog ceremony, cemetery, with full honors.
That's incredible.
This is a real loss.
Absolutely. But it actually, it just says so much. It just says so much about the care within this environment. It's just phenomenal.
There is care, yeah. and there is such special friendships that are built up between the canine unit, the dogs, the dog handlers, the soldiers. There are quite a number of pictures of Zilli in action that have been released subsequent to his death, showing him alongside soldiers on his leash, very, very well trained, knows what to do, very close to the people who he worked with. It's a special relationship that one should never underestimate.
Incredible. Really an amazing story. A drone was launched towards an Israeli gas field during the hostilities of Operation Breaking Dawn. How was this drone dealt with?
So we understand that the drone attack over the weekend was unsuccessful, but we are not told exactly why it was unsuccessful. So it was just simply something that somehow the IDF managed to either deal with, or the drone itself didn't succeed in the operation that it was sent out to do. And what it was sent out to do was to try to attack the Tamar gas field, which is about 20 kilometers off the coast of Ashkelon,
right,
in southern Israel, and of course quite near to the conflict area that took place over the weekend. And obviously the Israeli gas fields have now become a real point of interest for those people who wish to try and cause damage to Israel economically, and potentially to hurt and injure people, because of course those gas fields are manned. But it was interesting that it was released for publication that these gas fields are very well protected, including protection by Iron Dome units. There are Iron Dome units who protect the gas fields. And I think that was an interesting revelation for me to understand. During last year's conflict in May, which was an 11-day conflict with Hamas, we understand that the Tamar gas field also came under certain unwanted attention, and that the gas field actually, quite a lot of the fuel that was at the gas field was sent away from the gas field, and also that the platform itself was disconnected from the gas field for a period of time during that conflict in order to try to avoid any damage and, of course, any explosion that might have been caused as a result of explosive devices hitting either the gas or the fuel that's carried on the platform. So some quite interesting information that's come out about how Israel is working to protect the Tamar gas field, which is, of course, in the south, and we've also discussed at some length the Karish gas field in the north, that's right on the Lebanese border, and that's attracted some unwanted attention from Hezbollah in particular, also trying to send drones towards that particular platform.
Very, very, it's actually interesting, because we're going to see more and more of this, there's no doubt, and this is going to have to become an area of significant focus, which I'm sure it actually already is in any event. Palestinians are due to begin flying from Ramon Airport in Eilat. How's this arrangement going to work?
Yes, so this is also an interesting story, because the Ramon Airport in Eilat was recently opened to replace the small Eilat airport that was right in the middle of the city. And for the people who have flown to Eilat before, you may recall that you can actually walk out of the airport with your bags and walk to your hotel, which is around the corner from the airport. I mean, that was the nature of the airport, right in the middle of the city, and that was considered to be not particularly safe. And, of course, the land which the airport occupied was considered to be quite valuable land right in the middle of Eilat. So that airport was closed down, and instead the Ramon Airport, which is about 20 or 30 kilometers outside of the city of Eilat, has been opened up. The original plan was that Ramon Airport would be used not only for Israelis in Eilat, but potentially for Jordanians in Aqaba as well, to service both Aqaba and Eilat as an airport. As things have turned out, it's become a bit of a white elephant. It's not a particularly convenient airport for people going to Eilat, even though people, of course, do use it to go to Eilat, because it means that you need to have transportation at quite some distance back into the city. So it's become a little bit of a white elephant. It is being used for cargo purposes. And now I understand that there is a plan to try to channel West Bank Palestinians, people from the Palestinian Authority, to use the Ramon Airport to start flying out of and into. This is due to begin within the next month or so, the Israeli Airport Authority has announced. At the current time, those people living in the Palestinian Authority area who want to travel abroad need to go through the Allenby Bridge to Jordan and then cross over to Amman and catch the international flight from Amman. That's the current way in which those people usually travel. They don't usually travel through Ben Gurion Airport, but now apparently there will be a way to get them to Ramon and from Ramon, at least to begin with. I think there will be two or three flights a week to Turkey, from where people can then catch connecting flights if they wish to do so. I'm guessing that that'll just be some sort of an experiment to see if that works well. And if it does work well, and if there is a demand, then the more flights, of course, will be added.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Anthony Wright, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning with the Israel Report at 7:45.